Okay. All right. Can we get started?
Let's go. I'm good.
All right. Great. Hi, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Reimagining Work From Within. I'm Bev Atfield, a Within partner based in San Diego, California in the USA, but I have lived for the past couple of decades in Vancouver, Canada. And during my time there, I've come across and met and got to know some really wonderful people. And one of those people is Tim Rietsma. And today I'm delighted to welcome Tim onto the show to join us to talk about Invisible Condition, which is Tim's current mission to destigmatize and bring visibility to conditions that often go unnoticed, particularly in professional settings. And drawing from his personal journey with Crohn's disease, Tim's insights promise to challenge preconceptions and inspire today's conversation about building truly inclusive workplaces and looking more carefully at how to design employee experiences that support everyone at work. Tim is a skilled leader with over 15 years of strategy, operations, HR, digital content, and podcasting experience. He has held various senior leadership positions in industries including media, manufacturing, and clean tech. He also co-founded a leading HR and leadership publication called People Managing People, where you can find his original articles and past podcast episodes. And sidebar, that is where Tim and I actually got to know each other, but more on that later. But the reason why we're here having this conversation today, in addition to Tim's really interesting and depth of background on the employee experience front, Tim is currently working on a nonprofit called Invisible Condition. And in this project, he talks about the unusually normal illnesses and disabilities that are not apparent yet so common. The goal is to remove the fear that comes with sharing our personal stories to erase stigma. And Tim's vision is to create truly inclusive and compassionate workplaces, schools, and cultures. So welcome, Tim. That was quite a lot, but welcome here. And thank you so much for spending some time on the other side of the mic today with us.
Oh, I'm truly honored to be here, Bev, and excited for this really important conversation.
Beautiful. And, you know, I love the story of you and I getting to know each other. You are one of my best friends that came out of the pandemic era, where I think we met at like a networking, like one of those many networking events that we all needed and craved during the early pandemic days. And then I was fortunate enough to be on your podcast, wasn't I? Which is where we really had the first of many delightful conversations about our shared passion about how we can change the face of work and the experience that people have there.
Yeah, it's fun to look back at the journey of how we met, and not only how we met, but also stayed in contact with each other. You know, you cross paths with many people, and I always put in the back of my mind, it's like, okay, this is somebody I need to stay in touch with. And we have over the years, and we've gone on to do different things, and we still maintain contact. And we actually met for the first time only a few months ago, like first time in person. Yeah. Which is wild. And yeah. And so I always love our conversations. We're so focused on not just the employee experience, but how can we elevate? How can we change? How can we better workplaces? And that's something that has kind of united us through our experience and through our careers.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I got to learn more about your life behind the video screen and, you know, gotten to experience from your storytelling, you know, what you are living with and what impact that has on you, it, you know, it really resonated with me, because I've long held this philosophy around that, the idea that never judge people on how they appear to you at any given moment, because you don't know what is going on in that person's life behind the scenes. It's kind of that picture of that tip of the iceberg, right? You only ever see a little bit of what's happening at the top, or, you know, that picture of the duck where you can just see the duck's head, but the little feet are going underneath the water. And I find those two images are so true to what it's like to be living with something that nobody else is aware of, because they don't actually see it in the day to day and they don't know how to navigate that with you. So when you started telling me about how you were starting to frame this into something that was going to be a conduit for people to come to you and to share their stories and to really start to remove the stigma around the myriad conditions that exist that few of us might even be aware of with our own coworkers on any given day, right? I just was really buoyed by the fact that you were in the world and that you were doing the work that you're doing. So first of all, thank you for doing it. Thank you for being brave enough to tell your own story and for, you know, channeling that into something incredibly positive for the world. So really honored to have you here and just to be able to amplify that through this podcast and through the work that we do at Within People is also really joyful for me. And I'm so grateful that you're here to tell us everything you have to share today.
Yeah, again, thanks for inviting me. And, you know, Invisible Condition started off as this little project just as an outlet for me. You know, I was kind of tired of hiding my true self. And I live with Crohn's disease. I live with arthritis and a few other things. And I was tired of hiding this side of me. So I started sharing openly a bit more with friends and family, as well as to LinkedIn and on social media. And again, what I thought was just as an outlet for me, complete strangers started reaching out and saying, thank you. Thanks for sharing. Thanks for being vulnerable. I'm feeling like it's time for me to share my story. And so I thought, I'll release a couple of podcasts and write a few articles and that would be it. And here I am. I think 80% of my time now is into building this nonprofit. And we are booked, you know, 4 months in advance with guests, releasing every single week right now. People who are saying, enough's enough. I'm done hiding. It's time to share. It's time to tell my story. And I've also connected with doctors who are supporting this and saying, hey, if you want to learn how to self-advocate, yeah, I've written a book on that. And if you want to learn how to disagree with your doctor, I've got a book on that. And so I'm releasing an episode, or by the time this is released, it will be released as well, with a 20-year veteran physician who is like, hey, here's how to successfully disagree with a doctor. And so we're onto something, and we are going to end this stigma, and primarily in the workplace. That's where we're focusing.
Mm-hmm. So we know that you have established a nonprofit, you're building a brand around it. There's obviously been great interest and much success in terms of, you know, the early interest that you've seen in the podcast in particular. I've also noticed that you have a beautiful presence on LinkedIn and that there's some storytelling happening on that front. But where do you hope to funnel all of this effort into the impact that you could have in workplaces? What's your vision for what that is going to look like?
Oh, I don't think we have enough time to unpack that vision. I've actually already established a few volunteers who are HR experts who are dedicating their time to bring disability inclusion into the workplace. Mm. And I didn't ask for volunteers. People have said, hey, Tim, how can I support? We know that many organizations now are focused on DE&I. And there's a study out of HBR. This is a number of years ago. I think it was back in 2020. And they surveyed a number of companies. And well over 90% had a DE&I statement, but only 4% called out disability inclusion. Mm. And so the vision is how can we bring disability inclusion into the workplace in an accessible way? And not just in a way of saying, okay, we added it to our D&I statement, but how can we bring this into an organization for little to no cost through invisiblecondition.com to say, hey, here's how you can roll out a disability inclusion program. Here's some presentations that you can just adapt to your own workshop, but just giving that foundation. That's part of the vision, but also making it accessible for employers, but also employees. So often, what I had found and what I'm hearing is, hey, I'm diagnosed with something. I don't know how to disclose this. I don't know the accommodations to be asking for. So I'm working on a big project right now and hope to release that later on in the year, which is one of the most comprehensive databases of invisible conditions, an online resource, online support group, as well as example accommodations in the workplace and in school. So, hey, if you live with something, here's some opportunities so you can talk about your condition in more of a concrete way, instead of saying, hey, I live with something, and leaving it up to the organization or HR then to respond, but to say, hey, I live with something, and here's an accommodation that me and my doctor have talked about.
Mm. So it sounds like one of the quickest places you can see the impact of your work is in really it's in the nuts and the bolts of like just the mechanic of how do you as an employee navigate this. But there is more than likely the bigger and harder part of this is the emotional support and the environment that is created that makes it possible for someone who has been diagnosed with something or is living with something already to feel that they belong and that they can be open about what it is that they're dealing with. And I mean, that's going to be the heart of what we're going to get into today. I feel like there's just so much rich storytelling in your own experience, Tim, and what you've now heard from many, many people who've already come to talk to you on your podcast. And I think what it comes down to for me is a conversation about navigating the workplace with invisible conditions and how do individuals manage the work part of their life when they're living with an invisible condition? Because oftentimes, others don't know what is actually happening for that person. And it can be hard to talk about things that are uncomfortable, whether it be, you know, a disease or an illness or grief or some life experience that has been very traumatic. Those things all ladder up into invisible conditions. But they're not easy to talk about, are they, sometimes? And maybe all the time they're not easy to talk about, right? So, you know, I think maybe let's just spend a little bit of time talking about, you know, in your experience, what are the challenges that individuals face when they are attempting to navigate the workplace today with an invisible condition?
Yeah, you know, someone who lives with an invisible condition, a parent or maybe even an apparent condition, we don't need to disclose. And I think maybe there is some misconception is, hey, I live with something, I need to disclose it to my workplace. And you don't. I had someone on my podcast recently. His name is Miles. He works for an organization called Peak Performers, which is a disability recruitment agency. And he talked about just the power of disclosing and saying, hey, I'm not going to let my condition take over my life. I'm going to step into this. I'm not going to let my condition hold me back. And I'm going to take that power back. And so for someone who is thinking about disclosing or sharing, it is scary. There's a lot of fear wrapped around. I lived with a lot of fear because I didn't want to offend anyone. I didn't want to feel judged. I didn't want to feel that sense of, are you sure you live with something? Are you sure it's that bad? Mm-hmm. Oh, you should just, you know, maybe get some more sleep, or maybe you should change your diet. Those micro discriminations that happen. And I've experienced it all. And so there's so much fear that's wrapped around sharing about our visible conditions in the workplace. But there's also so much power. And I've heard this over and over again from people too, who said, you know what, now's the time to share. I'm going to share. I've also heard from people who don't work in an environment that they feel safe enough to share. So imagine, and a good friend of mine said this to me. He said, imagine we stopped living in fear of sharing about our invisible condition, and we stepped into a workplace where it was safe. Imagine how much brain power we use to hide and that we can reallocate to work. And there's a great study out of Accenture, and maybe we'll link that in the show notes, that said, you know, it says, can't remember the exact number, I think it was like over 2.6 times people with a disability outperform those who don't by, you know, multiple. And people might say, well, why is that? And for someone like myself, I can speak for myself. So if I feel safe in an environment and I feel that I'm not living in that fear, and I feel that I have ultimate trust with my team and my leader and my organization, man, I'm going to work hard for you. Because this is a place I don't want to leave. I want to stay, and I will perform. And so I think there's so many misconceptions around disabilities in the workplace. And another fun stat is, I think it's in the US, it's 1 in 4 people live with a disability. In Canada, it's 1 in 5. So if we look around our workplaces and our teams, you know, when we say, oh, disability, our mind often automatically goes to something that's visible. Mm. Well, I don't see somebody with a cane or limping or, you know, fill in the blank. But we know there's people then within our organizations who live with something that's not apparent. So are they hiding? Is it safe enough for somebody to share? If they need to share, is there the support that they need in place?
Well, and you know, the likelihood that that state is actually worse than it comes across right now is probably quite real. You know, there are probably people who would not even disclose in a survey what they are actually living with, right? So what that just means for us is that we need to work harder as leaders to be creating those places where people can feel safe, whether they choose to share or not. That's mm-hmm. their choice. But to also make it evident that power comes from sharing. Like, I love how you reframe that. Like, what does that do for us when we've created the space where people can feel safe to share? What does that offer all of us? It's not just the person who's experiencing the condition who's benefiting. We're all benefiting from it. And I think often we miss out on that metric of this lifts, when we lift someone up, we lift all of us up. And that is the goal, right? When we talk about employee experience and improving the human experience at work and creating people-centered workplaces, when we focus on creating these spaces, it helps all of us be better and welcomes people to be the best version of themselves. Imagine all the missed talent and potential that we're leaving on the table, right? With not creating these environments where people can be their full selves and can feel welcome regardless of what they're dealing with. So
absolutely. And it's like, if somebody's listening to this and they look around their workplace and they think, oh, look at Tim, he's not performing, or he's not keeping up with his teammates, or he's always in the bottom of on the performance scale. Instead of saying you need to do better, why don't we get curious and say, hey, what's going on? What's happening? And an employee will only answer truthfully and honestly if there's that level of trust. And so we can, you know, we can list off, here's 5 ways to build trust. You can Google that. You can head to various different resources to understand how to build trust. But honestly, if I'm sitting across from someone and they lean in and they say, hey, we've noticed this. What's happening? What's going on? Tell me more. And if I disclose that, hey, I'm living with something, or I've got constant medical appointments, or I'm caring for somebody with something who's going through something, instead of saying, well, you got to do your job, and maybe here's a different way to approach it. Thanks for trusting me with that. I appreciate that. Well, we know that we're having some struggles here. What do you need to perform at your best?
So what I'm hearing in that is just asking questions, and not interrogatory questions, but curious questions to really try and understand what's going on for the person underneath the water, right?
Absolutely. I think, you know, the work that you do at your organization, the work that Invisible Condition does, and whether it's at school or in workplace or just in society, is just get curious. You know, I had to disclose to a workplace that I was going through some health challenges, and it wasn't by choice. I had to phone my boss, I don't call him a boss. I had to phone my manager, my leader, the CEO, because I was in the hospital. I had severe complications. I was in the hospital. And I texted him and said, hey, do you have time to chat? And then said, I can't come to work. And he said, oh, are you going to be at work tomorrow? I said, well, it doesn't look like that. I'm actually laid up in the hospital. And he paused and said, what's going on? And just his soft tone of his voice. And I shared with him about Crohn's, and that my Crohn's came out of remission, and it was having a massive impact on my life. And what he did, I'll never forget this, and I'll tell this story as many times as I can, was the next day I got a message from him. He said, hey, Tim, I spent hours and hours last night researching Crohn's because I had no idea what it was. I understand that stress is a big trigger. So when you come back, we're going to work on that. We're going to make sure that we are going to minimize your stress. A couple days later, I came home from the hospital And there's boxes and boxes at our front door. I was like, well, what is this? So reluctantly, like, okay, this is strange. Opened up the box and there's a note from the organization saying, I can imagine how stressful this is on you and your family. So here's groceries and some treats for your kids. Hope you get better. That is how you approach someone who discloses that they have an invisible condition. And I got healthy. I worked my butt off for that organization. And if anybody ever wants a position there, you know, he is one of the best, because he got curious. And didn't just get curious, he then educated himself. And then he took action. So there you go. That's the recipe. Get curious, educate, and take action.
Yeah. Wow, that's a powerful story and a beautiful demonstration of what to do. I think if there was to be a survey of leaders who are actually capable of that today, I'm not sure. I'm feeling very encouraged by what results we might get back on that survey, but I think there's hope. And that's partly why we're having conversations like these, because there are those leaders out there who are wanting to ask those questions, who are willing to get educated and who will take action. But they also need to be in the confines or within the environment in which they operate, needs to enable that and let them live and breathe and be those leaders, right? So our work here, if we were to unite forces, is to really sort of change the architecture of organizations so that we can create spaces where those leaders can be liberated to help people be fully welcomed and feel cared for in workplaces. But we know that we've got a bit of a hill to climb, right? Because we know that, unfortunately, that's the perfect world and we're not there yet. Yeah. So let's talk a bit about what can we actually do to get to that perfect place that we know is possible. And we also know that if we can just change an experience for one person, then our work has been successful, right? At least that's my belief, is if I can just have an impact on one person, it wouldn't have been for nothing. So where do we start, Tim? I'm really curious about how do we remove the stigma that exists, the fear that people feel, and create spaces where people can share openly and feel supported with, you know, not only the mechanics of like how to disclose, but how to actually be supported and fully themselves in an organization. Where do we start?
The easy answer is just add disability inclusion to your D&I statement and post up your common issue policy. But, you know,
and we're done, right?
And we're done. And I think we could just end the show there. But we know, you know, that is maybe where we start. Maybe that's like point one on the journey.
Yeah.
And it's not going to happen overnight. And it's going to take a lot of work. So where do we start? Yeah, it is, if you're an employer, it's pausing this podcast right now, pull up your D&I statement and look for the word disability. And my guess is it's not there. And then you need to ask yourself, why isn't it there? What did we miss? We're missing one of the largest underrepresented groups in our workplaces, potentially. So what do we need to do there?
And there's probably a challenge around, like, how do we define disability too? Right? So it's a bit of a multi-layered interrogation that has to happen.
Yeah, and there's lots of resources like askjan.org. There's a lot of different places where you can go to say, okay, this is what our governments, if you will, have defined as a disability or disability in the workplace. So that's, I think, where you need to start. And what I've heard from many people is the accommodation process in an organization is either just doesn't exist, or if it exists, you don't know where it is, or you're too full of, there's so much even fear in that process because maybe you've heard of people being rejected. Well, there are laws that actually protect employees. And this is where I think employers really need to educate themselves is, okay, well, what is disability inclusion? What does it look like? I've also heard from organizations as well as people that say, hey, if I have to offer accommodation, it's often very expensive. So we don't even want to promote this. And there's studies mainly out of the US that say accommodation often is either free or up to $500. And there may be a process of assessment, which does cost, maybe it could cost a bit of money, but the actual accommodation isn't that expensive. So putting somebody through an arduous process to get something that is maybe free, like, hey, can we turn down the lights? Or, hey, can I get a key to the locked washroom? Or, hey, can I, you know, fill in the blank? It doesn't have to be difficult. And I came across this amazing company. It's called Disclo.com. And they help organizations with the accommodation process. They have a whole software built around this. So they take that arduous accommodation process and just make it super simple. So organizations, there is no excuse not to bring disability inclusion to the forefront. But there's also, you know, a little shameless plug, like bring people in like myself to come and talk about the words we use in the workplace. What is a micro-discrimination? How do we normalize this conversation? And often, and I'm guilty of this, we bring up the idea to HR leaders and just wait. But what if, as an employee, we say, okay, you know, we're tired of waiting. I'm going to organize something myself. Maybe it's at lunch or maybe it's after work. And so we can be internal advocates within our organization. So there's a couple of things right there, practical ways for employers. But I think it ultimately comes back right to our beginning of our conversation is you got to have that trust. If people are going to share, ask yourself, is there fear? And will people feel that they can share? And I've heard, when I first launched Invisible Condition, I heard from someone, a complete stranger, that said, I would never disclose because I'm afraid of losing my job. And I was afraid of that as well. Even some days I feel like I should just pull everything down because I'm afraid that my very public story is now out there. But I also don't want to work for an organization that doesn't accept my version of normal, because my version of normal is different than your version of normal. And that's okay. And how do we embrace that?
Yeah. So I'm curious about digging into the employee side of things, but let's just park that for a minute. I just want to finish because we've obviously identified that there's two sides to this. There's the employer side and the employee side. So I just have a couple of questions that I'm curious about on the employer side. The first is, what if I'm in an organization that doesn't actually have a documented DEI approach or philosophy that I can refer to that would guide my decision-making as a leader around how I could include someone or make them feel that they could disclose and be supported in that process? What do I do in that circumstance?
As an individual, it comes down to, okay, you've identified that your organization hasn't brought disability inclusion to the forefront. Maybe it isn't behind the scenes. So as we talked about earlier as well, is it's time to get curious. Hey, have we thought about this? Hey, I live with something. Or hey, I've come across these cool disability inclusion consultants. Have we thought about bringing this to the organization? And see where that lands. Because you can approach it in a few different ways. You can be one, which is, I would say, a bit more destructive, which is, why don't we do this? Why aren't we doing it? You know, being that very direct and forceful versus, hey, have we thought about this? And wait for that response. And maybe you'll come to the conclusion that says, well, we need to do this. And if you are, maybe you're an employee, maybe you're a manager, you don't need to wait for larger departments to roll out initiatives. You can start within your team. You could look up on various different websites, including mine, just the different awareness months, the different conditions that are being brought to the forefront each month, and say, hey, there's a lot happening in the coming months. What can we do to make sure that we are driving awareness? Is there a fundraiser we can contribute to? Is there some way that we can just start having that conversation?
Yeah, what I love about what you're saying there is, as leaders, we don't have to wait for permission or for the right time or for the budget or, you know, for whatever we feel needs to fall into place before we can have conversations and be curious about our team and what they're experiencing. And if we are truly building people-centric workplaces, then we need to be open to the idea that we can't boundary off what is considered a human experience. Because if you are truly a people-centered leader and you're trying to create a people-centered organization, people come as their full selves, whether you like it or not. So I think what I'm hearing and what you're saying is just like embrace that and be curious about the person as their full selves, even beyond what you can see at work.
Absolutely. Imagine a world, and I say this to people, I imagine a world where my kids, and they're quite young, where if when they get to that place where they have left university and entered the workplace, if they live with something that's invisible, I would love for them to not even hesitate to say, hey, I live with X and I need this accommodation, and a workplace to say, awesome, thanks for disclosing. Let's get you the support you need. Versus where we are now, which is a lot of fear and anxiety of sharing of, if I share, I'm going to get passed over for a promotion. I'm going to get treated differently. I'm going to get, you know, I might lose my job. You know, there's so much fear that's wrapped in this. So, I mean, that's a $1 million question is how do we get rid of that fear and create that safe enough place?
Mm. Well, and that steps nicely into my last question that I wanted to ask on the employer side of things around, as I've been thinking about the work you're doing and the impact that it could have, you know, how does the effort that every leader takes to create these more welcoming spaces, like how does that tie into psychological safety and creating space for risks to be taken? And the risk here is that someone discloses something that they're very afraid of talking about. How do you create those trusting spaces where people can have those difficult conversations without fear of judgment? And I know that that's part of it's obviously a bigger problem to solve, but what are your thoughts around how what you're doing ties into creating psychological safety in the workplace?
As a leader, it starts with you. And we've heard that through Simon Sinek's books, you know, like start with why. It starts with that leadership. You need to lead through this. And yet we're still having this conversation. How many years later after I first heard this, it all starts with the leader, but it truly does. And as a leader, I saw something interesting shift in a team that I had led many years ago, where in our daily stand-up, we incorporated just a check-in. How are you doing? And just a word to describe how you're doing. And I started to, you know, if I wasn't having a good day, I would say, you know, I would give that honest answer. And what we saw in that eventually over the coming weeks was the team started to kind of disclose just a little bit how they're feeling, how they're doing. I remember this one young person said, hey, my father was rushed to the hospital last night. I was with him all night. I'm really tired. I didn't step in. The team looked at her and said, we got you today. Tim, can she go home? We got her covered. You know, it starts with you and creating space to have authentic conversations. Don't get curious if you don't care. Simple as that. If you're going to get curious just in order to use that curiosity, whatever somebody's telling you against them, and to benefit for yourself, you're self-serving. Just get authentically curious. Shut out that noise and ask questions. But also, it's time to be vulnerable yourself, which is scary. I know leaders who would say, absolutely not. You know, I'll tell people you need to be vulnerable, but I won't be vulnerable myself. But I would say step into that vulnerability. And it's scary. And some people might go, why are you doing this? But you're going to build real relationships within your organization. You're going to change your organization from within. A little tie back to the work that you're doing, but you will. And I've seen it. But I've also seen the opposite of it. So creating those safe places to allow an employee to say, hey, I'm struggling today. Can I work from home today because I'm dealing with X, Y, or Z? Or, hey, I'm, you know, going through this, but don't worry, I'm going to make up my work at this time. How does that sound?
Yeah, and I think as leaders, if we can show up with that openness to the needs that people have, we start to just naturally create these spaces where other people start to model that, like the team that you just mentioned that said, "We've got your back, Tim, can they go home?" You as a leader don't need to do all the heavy lifting because you've created the container for others to step in and be able to do that themselves. And, you know, yes, that is absolutely the work that we do at Within. We have, you know, this leadership philosophy around these qualities of human-centered leaders. And we talk about things like courage and love and vulnerability and empathy and patience, which are all the things that we need to bring to bear when we are working alongside and walking alongside a team member who needs our support, right? And we need to bring this compassion to them around what they are experiencing, even though we ourselves can't fully step into their shoes. So I think you've given us some really great things to think about from the employer side of things and the leaders who are sitting at the employer space or side of this conversation. Let's shift into the employee side of things and the lived experience of someone who has an invisible condition, as well as the opportunity that exists for those who sit alongside that person and give some ideas and some suggestions around how we might help folks navigate in the environment that they're in. First of all, let's talk about someone who's experiencing an invisible condition. What is their role in creating the spaces that they feel safe in? Like, is there some responsibility that needs to be held by the person who is actually experiencing the discomfort or the illness or the disability that they have in their lives?
Oh, absolutely. There's definitely the responsibility of that employee. There's a responsibility of managing myself, managing yourself, as well as then advocating for yourself. And it's hard and it's scary because it's sometimes we don't want to look like we need help. We don't want to ask for help. We need to be, we're junior or we're climbing that corporate ladder, whatever that situation is, but asking for help in a specific way. If I went to an HR team or my HR leader and said, "I live with Crohn's, I need help." They're not equipped. They don't know the hundreds and hundreds of conditions that exist. And the thing is with so many conditions is they show up differently in different people. I live with Crohn's. My accommodation might be different than somebody else. So being specific, "Hey, HR team, I live with Crohn's. Some days are worse than others, and some days I need to work from home because I need access to a washroom. Can we figure that out?" I would say 99% somebody's going to go, "Yeah, let's figure this out." And because if they don't, then, you know, there's some legalities around it as well. But you're not asking for something that is out of the realm of something that, you know, you can still do your job. You can still perform. So as an employee, just to kind of wrap that up, is it's hard, it's scary. But I know firsthand that, again, it's taking the power back from that condition and saying, "This is what I need," and be specific in that ask.
Well, and there's so much power in the stories that you've been collecting through the interviews that you've had over the past year that are great examples of people who have come through the fear, because there are many people who you've spoken to who, like you, felt afraid and they didn't want to share what they were experiencing. They felt that it might be a sign of weakness. They weren't sure if it would impact their job or their ability to be promoted or some significant negative impact on their life. And if we can provide resources like the ones you are offering through storytelling, and I'm sure you've got much more coming in the next year and beyond to help people be equipped to have those conversations around, you know, how to have this conversation with your boss would be, you know, the first step that might equip someone to have a really meaningful conversation like the one that you've had to have, I'm sure, over the course of your working life. I guess my question would be, like, what's the most important thing that one person could do to help them feel like they are empowered and they have agency? Like, what would their first significant step be that you would recommend?
First is give yourself some grace. You know, whatever you're living with, whatever you're going through, you don't need to do it alone. I have found the power of community and connected with people who don't outside of Crohn's and my Crohn's community who have been there to just listen. Mm. And finding your people, finding that community is so, so important, whether it's within your workplace or beyond. And I think to get that sense of agency is I found I didn't know what to ask for and how to ask. And I created a simple model that I posted up on the website in an article that I wrote on how to advocate for yourself. Because I felt like that's something that I had struggled with, which is that what's your current situation? What are you feeling right now? What is the impact of that on your life and what do you need? So if I wrote an example specific for a doctor, but it could be adapted to the workplace as well, is doctor, I'm currently experiencing X, Y, or Z. I'm feeling that this is impacting my energy levels or impacting my work. And the impact is I don't want to feel like I'm letting my team down. I don't want to feel like I might be passed over for a promotion or whatever. So what I need is some accommodation in work from home or changing the work environment or what you fill in the blank. But getting clear on that situation, the feelings, the impact, and the need, that I think will help create that sense of agency.
Well, and I love that you've already started to document that from your own experience. And we'll obviously link to all sorts of resources in the show notes with the things that you've already mentioned. What I feel is so important is for folks to feel like there is help and that they don't have to feel alone. The other side of the question that I have around individuals and feeling agency and feeling that they're equipped to have conversations is not only with their boss, but the responsibility that they might have to open a conversation with their colleagues or their peers or their workmates. And what would you say are some effective ways for people to have those conversations that are educational and informative in the workplace?
Yeah, again, there's so many different conditions, apparent and non-apparent. And I have documented in this database I'm creating hundreds and hundreds. I've never heard of 99%. So I think if you're going to engage in a conversation, know that most people don't have ill intent. We might just not understand. We might not be educated, and we might not ask the right questions. And so if you are feeling, hey, I need to disclose to a team member, or I feel like I want to disclose, taking that ownership and saying, hey, I live with Crohn's disease, and this is what it is, and this is how it manifests in my life. I wanted to tell you because there's been days that I haven't been at work, and I know it seems that it's impacting you, but I want you to know this is what I'm living with right now, and it will get better, but this is something I'm living with right now. Maybe you fill in the blank. Maybe there's so many different conditions out there, and getting over that nervousness to talk to your team. And if somebody is disclosing, we're human, and I don't know about you, but I'm wired to try and fix things. And as soon as your brain goes to, I got to try and fix this, or I'm going to try to provide a solution, I'm now not listening to what they're saying. Mm-hmm. Oh, have you tried this diet? Oh, have you tried this vitamin? Oh, have you tried this? Or you fill in the blank. It's terrible. People don't want to hear it. I hear it. I heard it today. I got three unsolicited pieces of advice on how to get over Crohn's. Like, what? You can't. It's non-curable. But we have no ill intent, and that person didn't have ill intent. They had my best intention and at heart. So we have to remember that. But it's also, you got to say, look, I'm not looking for the new diet and advice. Like, when I was really sick a year ago, a year before we record this, I was just doing everything I could to stay alive. And somebody said to me, oh, you should try the carnivore diet. Like, well, my intestine is pretty much closed off. That would actually kill me, rupture my intestine, and I'd die. And somebody else said, oh, you should go full vegan. full vegan has cured Crohn's. I'm like, well, actually it hasn't. And because my intestine's almost closed, I would die. So thank you for that unsolicited advice. And so if somebody says it, you just have to say, you know, thank you and move on. But let's try also try to remember that people aren't looking for a solution. I know what I need. I live with Crohn's. I live with arthritis. I know what works for me. And I'll be frank and polite. You don't. And so I feel that I'm equipped. And if somebody wants to get curious and learn more, I'm happy to share what's worked for me. But it might not work for you or your friend's brother's uncle who had Crohn's. And so, you know, I think I could go on about this because the you should, you look language is something that just we need. Just take a pause. Think about what you're going to say. You look tired. You should sleep more. It's like, well, I have no iron in my body. And I go for iron infusions every 2 weeks just so I can stay alive. But thank you. I appreciate that. And so, you know, again, I could go on and on. I've documented most of these. Some of them are wild and funny.
I feel like there's a book waiting called The Ignorance of Others or something like this.
I love it. I'm going to add that to my list of books that I've, you know, started a draft out of. But yeah, the Look You Should series, I think, you know, you look pale. You should get some more sun. You look skinny. You should eat more. Yeah, I've heard it all. And, you know, you just politely say, okay, thanks. Yeah, I'm just trying to stay alive, but I appreciate it.
Well, and I think you've brought us some bonus content here that we didn't necessarily think about talking about today, but it's about some pointers for folks who are on the other side of the table when they are listening to someone share their story who is living with an invisible condition. And the not jumping to solve and the not providing of solutions and the not tending to, well, in my experience, I heard of this person who did this, so you should try this. And there's, you know, some really great advice in there because it's usually coming from a place of ignorance. So just stop it.
Stop it. You know, that's
the best advice.
You said it a lot more direct than me. I'm like, oh, there's usually no ill intent, but you're like, nope, it's ignorance. Stop it. I love it.
So maybe, you know, maybe it can be sweetened a little bit, but, you know, I think there are some good lessons in there around, you know, it comes back to being curious and to listening carefully and to trying to imagine what it might be like to be that person. And frankly, you've probably tried everything you could get your hands on to try and see if you could improve the quality of your life. Like, let's not be disrespectful to the fact that you've been on this journey for many years. And if you could have changed your diet, you probably would have, right?
No, it's just, I'm not going to change. That's it. Like, you know, I know, you know, fried food is going to trigger me. So I'm just going to eat fried food forever.
Anyhow, I think that we need to bring some sassiness to this. And I think that the time is over for us to be sort of trying to be nice around these things all the time. And, you know, I recently had a conversation about being kind versus being nice. And I think there is something around when you're in those conversations as someone who's got an invisible condition, the kind thing is to actually be quite direct to the other person if they are not bringing the level of insight and compassion that you think is needed in the moment. So lots of great ideas and life experience tips from you, Tim. Thank you. We are quickly coming to the end of this really delightful conversation. I don't know how we are already here at time. You've already packed so much in here for us with your lived experience, with what you've heard from others through your beautiful initiative that has quickly turned into something that has got a significant foundation and will continue to gain traction and belief and supporters in the years to come, I have no doubt. So let's just get to closing up a few of our thoughts here. And I know that you've given us a lot of insight and advice already, but I just wanted to close by asking specifically for your advice for leaders to foster a more understanding and supportive workplace. And what would your top tip be for leaders today? If you wanted to pull from something you've already spoken about or something that we didn't touch on yet, like what's the low-hanging fruit here for leaders to be creating these environments where people can feel safe to be themselves and to share what they're experiencing?
Well, the first is look around your team and ask yourself, are people, do I know things about my team? Because if you don't, you have an opportunity in front of you. And if you don't know much, you still have an amazing opportunity. And it's creating that space and that time. It could be 5 minutes, 10 minutes a week where you're not talking about work and deadlines and revenue and profits and whatever other metrics you're throwing around. And it's a time to just talk about life. Get past the how are you. Stop using the how are you. Because if 99% of the time you get, I'm fine, how are you? I'm good, how are you? It's just, you're not getting to the heart of your employees. So stop. What's top of mind for you today? Hey, what's going on in your life outside of work? Just, there's so many prompts. Just use whatever tool you need to generate prompts to get to know your team. Just do it.
Yeah. And what I love what you said in there about, like, just get real, like get past the pleasantries and really be curious about what people are experiencing and what their lived experience is at work and beyond work to really get to know them as a person. And that takes a growth mindset. It takes a quest for knowledge, not just about the work you're doing together, but the people who are there to do it together, which I think is really at the heart of, you know, Tim and I, we've come into alignment around this in many different fronts, didn't we? Around, like, it really comes down to the human experience at work. And yes, today we're looking at it through the lens of trying to create spaces for people who've got invisible conditions. But if we were to zoom out, it's really the quest that we both have to change the experience that individuals have in the workplace. So really great advice to leaders specifically. Let's flip it back quickly to the person who is experiencing an invisible condition. Top tip for someone who is currently not feeling resourced or courageous enough to share their condition.
Yeah, selfishly, I want to say head to invisiblecondition.com. There's a lot of great resources, but it's not even just about the, you know, if you land on the website and bounce right out to a podcast episode, connect with the people who have shared their story. Connect with people like Chris Ho or Felix Chan, people like Catherine McCord. Connect on LinkedIn, connect on through social, however you need to, because they are willing to take time out of their day to listen to your story. I am as well. Reach out to me. If you feel like, hey, it's time that I share and I don't know how, I wish I could give you just a simple, oh, here's your 5-step process on how to tell you, you know, go and Google that. It's hard, but there's power in it. And you might not get it right the first time. You might not know what you're going to say. Just let the words flow and step into what makes you your version of normal.
Just, you know, I wanted to emphasize the word power in there and just, you know, what it starts to look and feel like when multiple people come together, the change that can happen and the sort of the wave of a momentum that you can create when, even though people might have different conditions, the tools and the resources that we have when we band together are so much greater than us each sitting in our own space and holding these difficult things, when there is more than likely at least one person out there who would be willing to have a conversation about it. So, beautiful sentiment. Speaking of how to reach you, if someone wanted to get in touch with you after this conversation, how can they best do that?
Through the website, invisiblecondition.com. I'm quite active on LinkedIn. You can find me, Tim Reitsma, R-E-I-T-S-M-A, or on Instagram, invisible_condition. So there's three ways. I'm always have time for connection and to hear your thoughts and just to continue to elevate voices and end the stigma.
Brilliant. Thank you, Tim. Thank you for being here today. Thank you for sharing a little bit of your journey. I know that there's a lot that sits behind that that brought you to where you are today, but really grateful that you are here with us and that you have the courage and the compassion for yourself and for others, and that has driven you to create something like Invisible Condition. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in today. Really hope you found this time together valuable and that you will feel empowered and have the agency if you yourself are living with an invisible condition. And if you are a leader who is wanting to be more curious, hope that you feel more resourced coming out of this today. Thank you so much to Emily, our producer, who always brings us together and helps us to create these brilliant episodes, which we really hope will move the needle on the experience that people have at work. So please do tune in to our podcast every month for more episodes on what's happening in the culture and leadership space, what's on the minds of leaders committed to change in our community like Tim, and other future of work content you crave. Reimagining Work from Within is available wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's a wrap for today. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time. Done?